Get ready to be mesmerized. Get ready to be entertained. Get ready to be informed. And most of all, get ready to listen. The latest sports news, great interviews, and the best coverage around the nation's capital. It's Listen In with KNN right now on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM Fox Sports Radio. Here's your host, Kelsey Nicole Nelson.
Thursday, and with all that's happening in the sports world, I'd like to welcome you back, yes, you, for an all-new episode of Listen In, KNN. As the NBA season is underway, we are about to kick off, you know it, one of my favorite things, college hoops. I can't believe we're already talking March Madness. You are in for a hot episode with a very special guest. We are going to go back in time and speak with a sports legend for the special college hoops edition of Listen In with KNN, so you guys know what to do. Sit back, relax, and get ready to listen in. And as always, I like to start my show with Kelsey's Do Good Athlete of the Week segment. Now, this man, I know he's not one for a lot of recognition, but I'd like to recognize Mr. Tim Duncan. Now, if you don't know what he's been doing since retirement, you need to stay tuned, because this man has spent his time going back to help with hurricane relief. I thought this was wonderful. Now, not only was Tim Duncan one of the GOATs in basketball on the court, he's been one of the GOATs in basketball off the court when it comes to relief efforts in the U.S. Virgin Islands. Now, if you didn't know, Tim Duncan sprang back into action as soon as it was safe to fly back to his homeland, and he rallied help from San Antonians and basketball lovers from all across the U.S. to help with donations and relief efforts down after Hurricane Irma struck the U.S. Virgin Islands early in September. Now, Duncan has made at least three trips back to the U.S. Virgin Islands since September when the Category 5 hurricane hit. Now, if that's not enough for you, Tim Duncan's hurricane relief effort, guess what? In the 2.5 days that he first went to St. Croix, a little more than early September, he distributed nearly 24 pounds of food per person to more than 10,500 hurricane victims. If you compare the numbers I just said, in 2.5 days, Tim Duncan and his team distributed nearly 24 pounds of food per person to more than 10,500 hurricane victims. That's almost a week's worth of food distributed by Duncan and his team in 2.5 days on the island. Wow. Just wow. And I know Tim Duncan, he's not one to talk a lot about this stuff, but he's doing it. He's doing the stuff that needs to be done because people are still suffering. And I think a lot we're hearing about, of course, Houston and Puerto Rico, but I don't think U.S. Virgin Islands is getting that same attention. So I think it's great Tim Duncan went back and help those people who need help the most. Tim Duncan, congratulations on being Kelsey's Do Good Athlete of the Week. Yes, I'm talking about you, Tim. I know you don't like the recognition, but so, joining me today is someone very, very special. Why? Because we went to the same alma mater. That's right, the University of Maryland. Now, Herman Bill is my special guest today, and he's a way bigger name than me. And if you don't know Herman, he played basketball at the University of Maryland for four seasons, and in 1984, he entered the NBA draft. He was round six, 12th picks of the Phoenix Suns. And guess what? He is from Jackson, Mississippi, where my parents are from. So this guest, Mr. Herman Bill, is very near and dear to my heart. Now, Herman, welcome to the show.
Hey, Kelsey, thank you for having me. Fear the turtle. Fear the turtle.
Always and forever. I always tell people like that. Now, before I get any deeper into you, what was it like playing with people like Ben Coleman, Adrian Branch? I mean, there's so many, Buck Williams. Tell me a little bit about your playing days back at the University of Maryland.
Oh, my playing days were great. I played with some of the greatest players to ever play the game and against some of the greatest players to play the game. Ben was a stud. Buck Williams, he was one of the meanest guys that I've ever played against. He was very aggressive, very calm, and a person that was not very boisterous off the court, but on the court, it's as if he turned into an entirely different person. Greg Manning was one of the greatest shooters that I've ever seen. Adrian Branch had as much talent as anybody that you can imagine.
Right.
And, of course, Len Bias, he was
yes.
He could have possibly been one of the greatest basketball players ever.
Wow. And you touched on Len Bias. I want to know if you could tell people a little bit maybe about something about Mr. Len Bias, may he rest in peace, that they don't know about him.
One of the things I remember about Lenny that I think a number of people wouldn't know is that this guy had a voice. He was a great singer. You know, we'd travel on the buses to the airports, and he would sing, especially around Christmas time, he would sing the Christmas song by Nat King Cole. And
So you really have to know how to sing to do Nat King Cole.
Yeah, he could really sing, and he was a great artist. So he was a multidimensional young man.
Very, very impressive. Now I want to get into something that you've been doing off the court since your Maryland basketball days, and that's Mike's Seasonings. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing with Mike's Seasoning and how people can get involved and get some seasoning on their food.
Hey, well, our product was created by Mr. Michael Garner, a gentleman that I played high school basketball with. His recipes, he created all the recipes. We have four distinct and flavorful varieties. We have a tangy salt-free, a low sodium, an 8% sodium content original, and a spicy. All of our products
wonderful,
go great
so we can keep our waistlines.
Yeah, yes. All of our products go great on all meats, all vegetables. You can put it on, you can use it pre, during, and post preparation of your meals. And you can get us at www.herman4maps.com. That's www.herman4maps.com.
Perfect. Wonderful. And I love that because, you know, you're Southern. My family's Southern. So I've had food up here in the DMV area. And sometimes you need that extra seasoning to give it a little extra kick. Because, you know, down south, I don't think you need to add anything. I don't see myself picking up the pepper or the salt shakers. But up here,
It
helps sometimes to add a little extra to make sure your belly's happy and that you leave a restaurant or your kitchen really happy. So I think that is wonderful. So thanks so much for sharing your information about that. But now, Herman, first of all, I can't let the show go by without talking about Jackson, because you know my dad is from Jackson, my mom is from Jackson. So tell me a little bit, have you been back to Jackson anytime soon? And tell us a little bit about how did Jackson help really shape your basketball career to what it was?
Well, I left Jackson in 1979, of course, on scholarship to Maryland. I was not heavily recruited, and you know, basketball is a game down there where we play it on asphalt. We play it in the backs of people's homes on dirt. And that's primarily the way I grew up playing the game, on dirt. And, you know, we develop a seriousness about the game, but it's always fun. It's always fun, I think, to persons that come out of Jackson specifically, but Mississippi overall. The players that I've known that have come out of there, that we enjoy the game of basketball. You know, we know that it could lead into a business, but we enjoy the game of basketball. And the way that it helped shape me is that, you know, even though I had that persona on the court as if I didn't take any stuff from anyone, you know, I was really enjoying what I was doing. And I think that's what carried, you know, that's primarily what carried over for me from the high school, from Jackson, Mississippi, onto the courts of Maryland.
Wow. And tell me a little bit, when you came from Jackson, coming to Maryland, I mean, how different was that life change for you? Because I know, obviously, they're two vastly different places. Or do you think you accustomed pretty easily?
Oh, I think I became acclimated to the environment. But, you know, there were several things that I had never seen, you know, going through the student union, my first time seeing a group of Hare Krishnas. I didn't know what was going on.
Wow.
You know, actually being on the court with someone like Al King and to see him go down and do this tremendous dunk. I was like, oh, wow, I'm in the big time now. To play in Cole Fieldhouse before 14,500 fans and to, of course, have a coach like Lefty. Lefty was a very knowledgeable coach as far as preparation was concerned. And he had us prepared for anything that a team could possibly have done on the court. And just the idea of having that type of, I guess, the environment with the fans mm-hmm. who are so dedicated to the sport, who are so dedicated to basketball, I think that was the biggest thing that I had to become adjusted to, is that everyone knew the Maryland basketball players.
Right, right. And I think, I mean, Maryland has long been known as a basketball school, right? And I think especially yes. in your days, it was more of a basketball school, where now, of course, they're trying to be more of a football school, even though with all the injuries the Terps had on the football field, I don't know when that will come. But, I mean, Kyle, you talked about it. Cole Fieldhouse has so many memories. And I know now they've redone it. They renovated it. And now it's the football team's practice facility. But, I mean, talk a little bit about Cole Fieldhouse and just some of the great matchups that happened there, for maybe people that don't know, for people that just want to remember all the great stuff that happened there in College Park.
Oh, yeah. Cole Fieldhouse is full of memories. You know, you had Sampson versus Buck Williams. You had mm-hmm. Al King versus Al Wood from North Carolina. You had James Worthy, Jeff Lamp from Virginia, along with Lee Raker versus Ernest Graham. You know, when we talk about Maryland basketball and Cole Fieldhouse, you know, a lot of people forget about Ernest Graham, even though his number is in the mm-hmm. rafter. Ernie Graham was one of the great players to have donned the uniform for the University of Maryland also.
Wow.
A great guy, and he's doing great things in the city of Baltimore right now. You know, the just the atmosphere alone, you know, you had the fans who were to me, it's almost as unexplainable the way that the fans were so into the basketball games there. The ACC and playing those teams from Tobacco Road and Cole Fieldhouse, it's uh-huh. not like anything that you can ever imagine. You know, just sitting here
wow.
envisioning some of the fans. You know, we had a student manager by the name of Steve Castle and Evie Bush. Those guys knew basketball just as well as the basketball players. You know,
wow.
I remember going to the bench on occasion, and they would tell me, watch this guy, he's about to do this. And turns out that's what they would do. And you
wow.
know, but I was prepared for it because they were so much into the game also.
That is wonderful. And, I mean, you talked a little bit about it, the ACC. Now, of course, Maryland now is in the Big Ten. And before we talk about the Big Ten Maryland team that we see now, tell me a little bit about when you first heard Maryland was switching over to the Big Ten. What were your thoughts? And then do you think Maryland basketball is the same since joining the Big Ten Conference?
Well, let's just be honest now. It was a money thing for the university and for the athletic
mm-hmm.
programs. You
right.
know, you can concentrate on Tobacco Road and football and things of that nature. But, you know, there are other students that attend Maryland on athletic scholarship. And I think that it's incumbent upon the university to have sought after the most economically viable situation that would have allowed them that allowed those students to remain student athletes at the University of Maryland. So when I heard it, I understood fully. Yeah,
okay.
You know, you reminisce about not being able to play against the Dukes and the North Carolinas anymore. But
that's what a lot
know,
of people
also,
were mad about.
Yeah, but you have to understand that rivalries can be fostered with any school. You know, I've been fortunate enough now out here in the Midwest to attend a number of the road games. That rivalry that we are beginning against Michigan State and Indiana
mm-hmm.
to do, it's unbelievable. You know, of course,
right.
you know, a lot of the students won't have opportunity to travel down I-95 to get to some of the road games. But
right.
the fostering of new rivalries is, to me, that's a huge thing. And I think it's going to be great for the athletic programs, and I think it's going to be great for the university as far as financially.
I agree. I think, I mean, at first I was kind of like, because I was at Maryland when this move happened, and it was kind of weird, right? Because I grew up, as you said, you know, watching these ACC rivalries back, you know, in the Xfinity Center, back when it was Comcast Center.
Right.
And, you know, I just got used to it, but now I'm loving, like you said, there's new rivalries being built, and I think the students are still behind it like they were when you were there now. So, like you said, new rivalries can be built. And once a turtle, always a turtle. You are going to support that team.
Absolutely.
Now, I want to talk
Absolutely.
Now I want to talk about the current Terps team. Now, you said you've been on the road games. You've kind of seen the squad last season. So, last season they finished 24-9. 12-6 conference record. And, okay, so Maryland basketball, we have to be honest, Herman. People aren't scared of Maryland basketball like they used to be. Now, of course, the 2015-2016 squad, which I thought was really deep, you lost a lot of big names. You lost Rasheed Suleiman, Robert Carter, Jake Layman, and Diamond Stone. And then, of course, when Melo Trimble returned for his junior season, a lot of people were excited. And, of course, as we all thought, Melo led the Big Ten in this Terps team. He was an all-conference player. He averaged 16.8 points per game and 3.7 assists per game. And then, of course, who can forget that game winner, the three-pointer to beat Michigan State in the regular season? But there's no Melo returning this year. You remember that. I mean, it was crazy. But there's no Melo this year. We have a senior in Michael Chavowski who's going to graduate after this year. But so the starters right now are Anthony Cowan, Kevin Herter, Jared Nickens, Justin Jackson, and of course, big Michael Chavowski. Now, there's no really big star names. Now, I think out of the starters, Justin Jackson, personally, I think he's one of the most promising players. Last season, he averaged 10.5 points per game and 6 rebounds. But, I mean, tell me, is this Terps team enough under Mark Turgeon's direction to really make some noise this season and possibly even get to the March Madness component of the season?
Yes, I'm looking forward to this season. I think, you mentioned some really big names, but just as I, you know, now they're history, and we appreciate
right.
everything that they've done for the Maryland program, but these young men have an opportunity to do something big for themselves and for the University of Maryland basketball program. You know, Tchaikovsky, barring injury, Tchaikovsky could be one of the biggest impact players that we have. You know, I like that kid's flexibility, his athleticism. Justin Jackson, only thing with Justin Jackson is that he now has to take the self-imposed shackles off. You know, last year I think he was capable of doing some things that he didn't do because he was deferring to Melo. And Melo was a great player for our program. But now
right.
that he's gone, I think that's going to free up a number of the young men to do what they are capable of doing within the system. The Herter kid, I'm crazy about his game. You know, I think
he can shoot.
Yes, and he has the ability to put the ball on the floor. So, you know, those things in combination with the Bruno Fernandez,
yes.
we now have a toughness. We have a toughness. I think, and the transfer from Rice and Duke, Obi, I don't know how to pronounce his name. I think he's a space eater that's going to make the difference for us in the middle. You know, if the kids get on the same page and they learn that defense is a team thing, then I think we're going to make more noise in the Big Ten than anyone could ever imagine at this point in time. So I'm really looking forward. And Anthony Cowan.
You got me excited.
Anthony Cowan, you think you're excited. I'm so excited. I don't know. Anthony Cowan, once he fully understands that, you know, that I can beat this guy off the dribble or I can take the jump shot and just to, you know, Coach Mel Cartwright, that used to be an assistant coach for us, he said you have to be quick but never in a hurry. And once once Anthony Cowan learns that, I think he's going to be tremendously impactful for our program.
Because Cowan is such a huge piece, right? That's why he was brought in, because we knew Melo had to leave, right? You can't stay in college forever. He had bigger dreams.
Right.
Now, Cowan, as you said, I mean, he's going to be the new general of this team. I think everyone's trying to get behind him. He's 6'1", so he's solid, not the biggest guard. But he averaged 10.3 points per game last season and 3.9 rebounds, 3.7 assists, which actually tied Trimble for the team lead in assists. But he's a scorer, and he distributes the ball well, which I think you said. Now, Herter, I think he's huge, but he just needs to be consistent. Because when he's hot, when he gets hot from three, it's beautiful. It's nice, right? He went 7-for-11 last season against Nebraska. I mean, it was crazy. But at the same time, again, consistency. Because Maryland doesn't have that. Maryland doesn't have those big names that they usually have, I think, to start a season. I mean, even in Big Ten Media Day, get this, not a single Maryland player received a vote for the first team consideration. Not one player. Go ahead.
And you know, Kelsey, I'm excited about that. I'm excited about that because
you like that to kind of define the odds.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and they're not encumbered by what they think people expect of them. So they can go out and they can be free to express themselves as far as athletically. They can do the things that they know that they're capable of doing, and not think that they have to live up to someone's expectations other than Coach Turgeon's and themselves. So if they are capable of doing that, our team, this team that we have now, I'm more excited about this team, honestly. I'm more excited about this team that we're about to put on the court this year than I was about the team last year.
Wow, see, that's huge. And I will say a positive you mentioned was Bruno Fernando, right? And I think he was actually voted by the media that they think he will be freshman of the year in the Big Ten. Now, if people don't know about him, he was a top 100 big man out of the IMG Academy in Florida. He originally committed to SMU before changing his mind and joining the Terrapins. Now, Turgeon has said he has no problem giving freshmen big roles early on. So this kid, they're saying, has a chance to replace Stavowski if need be. So I think he's an exciting person to watch coming off. Now, does Maryland have the strongest bench? I don't know if people will say that. I mean, you have Bender, Morsel. And I guess my only question for Maryland, and like you said, they're going to have to prove it because nobody's expecting anything. But at the same time, I just worry if Turgeon can get used to not having that star player. Because let's be honest, Herman, Melo a lot of the time pulled Maryland out of some holes just because of his confidence and his short shooting. He wasn't afraid to drive to the basket. He wasn't afraid to take the shot from the outside. And I just really hope Cowan gets that confidence that I think Melo had, because actually I think he got really comfortable dishing the ball off. But now he's going to have to be that general and sometimes make that last-second shot to possibly win a game such as Melo did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, like I said, I think we have two or three players that are capable of taking over that role that Melo had last year. Justin Jackson, Erder, and people forget that we also have a kid by the name of Deion Wiley. If he can stay healthy.
Yeah.
If he can stay healthy, I think he'll be a tremendously impactful on the team also. But
I agree.
You know,
people forget him.
Now we have the team where they're interdependent. You know, they're dependent upon one another rather than just deferring to Melo. I think we got caught in a situation where a number of our players, because they weren't upperclassmen, they just automatically deferred to Melo, even if they may have had the opportunity to expose the player that was playing was defending them. This year, I think Justin and Herder and Cowan will be free. Like I said, they'll have the shackles, and their self-imposed shackles taken off them where they can go ahead and express themselves more freely on the court.
Well, I'm hoping they do. If people don't know, in the unofficial Big Ten preseason media Big Ten poll, Maryland was actually placed to tie for fifth in the Big Ten with Michigan.
Yes.
Now, ahead of them, people think Michigan State will be top, followed by Purdue, Minnesota, and then, get this, Northwestern at number four. And we all remember the run Northwestern had last season, which was just spectacular. It was crazy to watch, right, because we weren't used to Northwestern being that good. But Maryland, it's interesting that they put them in fifth place with Michigan. So the Big Ten, it'll be interesting to watch what happens with the Big Ten. But I will say Maryland did so far get a commitment of four-star combo guard Eric Ayala, who is a recruit. And I think if he stays with Maryland, Maryland's recruiting class coming in, they're only going to get stronger. He's 6'5". He's rated 76 on the 24/7 Sports Composite rankings for the class of 2018. He said he doesn't mind playing on the ball or off. He's a good ball handler, and he has a lot of toughness, Herman, and just he's creative. So I'm excited, hopefully, if he stays with Maryland and becomes a recruit for the next class. I think Mark Turgeon does do pretty well bringing in some top recruits to Maryland basketball. And I think if he can do that, Maryland basketball will be pretty good. But now I want to switch it over to the women's side because I think the women need love too. And what Brenda Freeze is doing, I mean, how can anybody say anything bad against the Lady Terps? But I think the Lady Terps are kind of going through, Herman, what men are doing, and that's kind of that they don't have a star anymore, right? I think Brenda Freeze has so often had that star lady basketball player, and I think now she's seeing the same thing Mark Turgeon is, that we don't have that star, but she does have a pretty short team. Now, of course, last season she lost All-Americans Breonna Jones and Shatori Walker-Kimbrough, who graduated and now are playing in the WNBA. And she also lost the National Freshman of the Year, Destiny Slocum, who transferred from Maryland to Oregon State in May. So tell me, I mean, do the Lady Terps maybe have what is needed to bring a championship back to College Park?
I definitely think so. I think Brenda has done a phenomenal job. I'm saying an outstanding job, along with Coach, along with Coach Turgeon. He's done an outstanding job. But Brenda Freeze has done a phenomenal job. And look out for Miss Charles. I think I saw her.
Olivia
It was in the McDonald's All-Star game. I saw her when they were out here in Chicago. I think that young lady has an outstanding upside, and that she's going to be able to do the things that Kelsey, I'm one of those persons that I honestly believe that it is an advantage to not be, first of all, ranked as highly as people would like us to be ranked, and then for there not to be this, even though I played with superstars my entire career, I think that there's an advantage to not having a person that's identified as the go-to person, because now everyone is free to, like I said previously, to take the self-imposed shackles off, to do what they know they're capable of doing, so that they can have a positive impact on the team. You know, back in my day, I knew I left school as a scorer. I left high school as a scorer. But when I got to Maryland, I saw that we had a Buck Williams, a Al King, a Ernie Graham, a Greg Manning, and I knew that I had to find my way onto the court, and that was through defense. So a number of these players are going to be able to identify their niches so that they then can go out and show the coach that, hey, coach, you need to put me out there because I'm capable of doing this part of the game. And that's what's going to keep us a competitive throughout the season, is if you keep me on the court. And so individual players are going to be competing with one another to try to get playing time so that and then all that does is improve your team. That makes your team much better over the long run.
Right. I think that's great. I mean, you talked about it, right? There's no sure score. But like you said, now it's actually team basketball where everybody is playing the role to help the team. You know what you need to do. And like, I think it will help build a confidence for everyone. Now, I know for fans, it's been surprising because this season, for the first time since joining the Big Ten Conference, the Maryland women's basketball team is not the league's preseason favorite. Now, the Terps were picked by the league's coaches to finish second behind Ohio State, which if you've been watching Maryland women's basketball, last season they denied Maryland its third straight outright regular season title. But the Terps later won the conference tournament, their sixth Big Ten championship, which is crazy. I mean, what Brenda Freeze is doing. But I think people do need to look at, like you said, they do have players. They do return to your starter, Kristen Conforay. Like you said, I mean, what Kalia Charles is doing is simply amazing. I think people need to remember that name. She was actually one of 10 players named preseason All Big Ten by the league's coaches. Last season, she averaged 9.7 points per game. I think that's only going to go up. And can you really doubt Brenda Freeze? This is her 16th season at Maryland for a reason.
Well,
I don't
think you can
say anything bad about her.
I don't think people doubt Brenda Freeze at all, but we become so accustomed to winning. You become the fans, and I'm a fan now. You become so accustomed to winning, you become spoiled. And then if you fall short in any way, then you start, the rumblings start as to, well, she should have done this, you should have done that, you should have done this, that second guessing starts. But I don't think anyone that knows anything about the sport, everyone is free to do what they want to do, but if you are truly a Turban fan, you know that Brenda Freeze is basically above reproach as far as getting it done for the University of Maryland and for the fans of the University of Maryland.
Right. You said it well.
Just sit back,
just watch
and she'll get the job done.
Exactly. That's the best part about being a Maryland basketball fan. You know, Brenda Freeze, like you said, you can just relax because you know she's going to do what she needs to do, and all you have to do is cheer. So we look forward to watching the Lady Terps November 10th for their season opener against Albany. That will be a good one. Now I want to cross state lines, Herman, and I want to take it to Georgetown men's basketball, who, of course, there has been a lot of buzz around. And why, people ask, if you don't know, I don't know where you've been, but, of course, in 2017, the Georgetown Hoyas elected to end the John Thompson family era. So John Thompson III was ousted as coach. And who did they hire? None other than basketball legend Patrick Ewing. Now, he's been trending really even more so because Tuesday night HBO Real Sports did a documentary on him, and it was The Return of Patrick Ewing to Georgetown, which I thought it was great. Did you get a chance to watch Herman at all?
No, I didn't get a chance to watch that.
I mean, you already know about his stuff. I mean, it was really great to see. Now, one thing I thought was really interesting, it's just a weird fact that I saw, was according to Real Sports Research, among the 258 head coaches hired in NBA history, the vast majority of whom were once players, only 15 of them, just 6%, have been centers. I thought that was crazy. Like, why don't centers get love in NBA coaching? I don't know. I thought that was very interesting. And Coach Ewing also just joined Twitter, which I thought was pretty cool. He's finally on the social media bandwagon at Coach Ewing, 33. Now, I mean, Pat Ewing, I mean, he has everything, right, Herman? He's done it all. Three-time first-team All-American for the Hoyas, led them to the national championship in 1984, 15 seasons with the Knicks, number one draft pick. I mean, he's done it all. I don't even need to say his stats, because we all know, if you know Pat Ewing, you know he's pretty much done it all. Now, the question is, Herman, that everybody is asking, will he be able to recruit quality players for his team? Because right now, people are saying, kind of like the Maryland team, his team is deprived of talent. They also don't have those big names. I mean, do you think Pat Ewing will have what it takes this first season in the Big East to make noise for Georgetown?
Well, I don't know whether or not it'll happen in the first season, but as far as recruiting is concerned, I think that he kind of has the advantage as far as recruiting centers and big name centers, because if anyone is concerned with, you know, sending my son to play for Pat Ewing, they'll know that he has what it takes to show them what it takes to actually succeed on the college level and possibly take that next step to the NBA.
True.
So I think he has somewhat of an advantage on that. But, you know, honestly speaking, you know, you said from the outset that, you know, the John Thompson family, I just think this is an extension of the John Thompson family.
That's what people are saying.
And honestly, you know, and I'm not the first to say it. My wife honestly said this first, that John Thompson, the junior, that he was about 3 years overdue to, you know, not to speak negatively of John, but I think he was 3 years overdue as far as no longer holding the job of head coach at Georgetown.
The noise had started for him a while back before he got fired. I think he made a good point.
Right. My wife made mention of that about 3 years ago. But I think what happens now, especially, and, you know, and I did a little AAU coaching. Kids nowadays, they more quickly kind of get tired of hearing the same voice. And you know, that doesn't bode well for coaches. Doesn't bode well for coaches. But, you know, when you have your Dukes and your Kentuckys and places such as that, the recruiting is important, but more so, you know, they're signing players based on history.
Right.
You know, and the blue chip quality of the school. And because Georgetown has been on the downslope in previous years, last several years, they weren't getting the same looks by recruits that they had gotten in previous years. So now with a big name talent and a big name success like Patrick Ewing being at the helm, I think they'll start getting that look once again.
And that's good, but you brought up a good thing. We talked about the Thompson era, right? So I thought this was interesting. Pat Ewing said that he's offended by people who ask him if John Thompson, who of course is Big John, will go coach Georgetown. What do you think about that? Or do you think it's just like a bad rumor that got out?
Now, if I'm understanding what you're saying, there's been this rumor that now John Thompson will be coaching through Pat Ewing?
Yeah, people have said that they think he will be ghost coaching. I'm just spreading the word. That's my job, right, to ask you the question. That's what people are saying, because they think he has such a grasp over Georgetown, of course, winning Georgetown's only championship. And, of course, people who know Georgetown probably should have had another championship added to their title ring.
Right. Well, and if I'm Pat Ewing, I'm offended also. I think Pat Ewing possesses the attributes that are going to be necessary to be a great head coach at Georgetown. everyone has a tutor. Everyone
right.
has a person that they've been a mentee under. And so if he decides that he wants to hold a conversation with John Thompson Sr., I think it's totally within his right to do so. You know,
right.
Krzyzewski had Bobby Knight. Let's not forget
mm-hmm.
that. Now, he wasn't on campus with him. But, you know, I can name numerous pairings of coaches that are now coaching, are now were coaches for coaches that are now in the game. So, you know, let's not take anything away from Pat Ewing and his ability to possibly get the job done at Georgetown without giving him a chance to do so.
Right. You have to give the man a chance. I mean, and so let's talk about Georgetown team, right? Let's take it to the court. So the projected starters, of course, are Jesse Govan, who's a junior, Marcus Derrickson, who's also a junior, and then you have Jagan Mosley, who's a sophomore, and I hope we're saying his name right, Jonathan Mulmore, who's a senior, and then last but not least, Jamarco Pickett, who is a freshman. Now, I think
mm-hmm.
out of that, now I've seen Jesse Govan play. I've been following him for the last two seasons, and now this will be his third. He is a pretty sure big man. He can clog up the lane, and he's
mm-hmm.
really been the primary big man for Georgetown. I think he's talented. He can score. I mean, he can pretty much do it all. And I think they're going to lean on him more because they lost LJ Peak and Rodney Pryor, who were the other big scoring options. Jesse Govan was kind of that third one in that scoring option. So I think he's kind of the more sure person for Pat Ewing. Now, the only thing is I think he's definitely going to need to be a bigger rebounder because he really only averaged 5 rebounds a game, which is too low for a big man like him.
Yes.
So I think
yes.
if he can step that up, he'll be better. Now, Marcus Derrickson, I think, is another strong person. He's also a leader, and I think he's another sure scoring option. But as I said, you heard the names I said, Herman. There's really no, you know, huge big names. And, of course, I know, as we both know, the Big East is really trying to rebuild itself and become back that conference that people are scared of for basketball. Now,
right.
Georgetown,
now,
of course, people aren't expecting a lot. Go ahead.
Now, the kid Mulmore, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, Mulmore.
Yeah.
I watched maybe 2 or 3 of the Georgetown games last year, and
okay.
I can't say that I watched the entire games. But I was impressed with that kid's tenacity. And the Govan kids, yeah, he under-impresses as far as his rebounding is concerned. But I think that if they get back to fundamentals, they get back to the basics of playing this game and rebounding, then he'll do a much better job at that this year. Simply because he wants to. Go ahead.
Right.
I'm sorry.
No, you're right. Like you said, I think you're right. I think he's only going to get stronger. And if people don't know about Mulmore, I mean, last year he played significant minutes, right, on the floor for
mm-hmm.
a young team. And then if people didn't know about him before, he was an elite scorer back at Allegheny Junior College before he came to Georgetown. He's 6'5", so he has tall and he has the length. So I think they just kind of all have to work together. But I think Georgetown could do something in the Big East, Herman.
Yes, yes, yes. I think so also. You know, the what do you call it, the DMV? I think you all are in for some exciting basketball this year.
Good. And I mean, I'm telling you, Georgetown and Maryland, I think that's what we talked about, rivalries. I'm telling you, Herman, every time Georgetown and Maryland have played each other now, it is packed, whether it be at the Capital One Center or if it's at the Xfinity Center back in College Park. I think that's going to be one of the new big rivalries in the DMV area, at least. I'm telling you,
yes.
those games are sold out.
And that's a rivalry that should have been going forth ever since I was there. I think we played them once or twice when I was in school. One time was in the tournament, and one time was during
okay.
regular season. But because of some extraneous events or something, situations that happened back in the day, they couldn't agree on, you know, where they would play and the money type thing, all that's concerned. But that rivalry is a natural rivalry. That's a game that needs
right.
to be played each and every year. So at least
I agree.
Year. Yeah.
I agree. And another thing I want to talk about is some of their reserves. Now, I think Trey Dickerson is probably one of their stronger reserves, who's a senior. But one person I really want to talk about that there was kind of a lot of talk about is Trey Mourning. Now, of course, that's Alonzo Mourning's son, who everybody knows. But I thought it was really interesting. Now, if you remember, he had agreed to transfer before John Thompson was fired, right? But then Pat
mm-hmm.
Ewing actually convinced him to stay. Now, I mean, I think he'll get minutes on the floor. Will he do a lot? I don't know. But, of course, I think Trey really wants a chance to prove himself as he is a senior this year. So do you think, I mean, what do you think about, first of all, I mean, how do you think that spoke to Pat's leadership, right? Getting a Stars kid to be able to stay there after he really expressed a lot of frustration with John Thompson as a coach. He got him to stay, but I mean, how do you keep a kid like that happy if he's not starting? And what do you think that says about Pat?
Well, I think it speaks highly of Pat convincing him to stay and, you know, expressing to him that, you know, you're not here to be your father. You're here to be who
right.
you are, you know, to
right.
be Trey. And I think, honestly, and I'm just speaking from personal perspective, I think that
mm-hmm.
kids that sign with their fathers or sign at their father's
mm-hmm.
alma mater,
the family
is really doing them a disservice, especially if the parent was a well-known success.
Right.
You know, so you're really not giving the child, really not giving the junior the opportunity to be who they can become, because they are constantly, and fans are constantly comparing them to their parents. So I think
right.
that's doing them a disservice. And so for Trey to actually decide that he was going to stay there, I think Pat, you know, essentially told him that, you know, we're going to use you, but we're going to help you to become the best player that you can be in the situation
right.
that you have now with 1 year remaining.
And that speaks a lot. And I think Trey probably saw, too, like, Pat Ewing's a big name like my dad, you know, so coming from him, he probably knows and meant the world to him. But I agree, it's so tough to play at the same school as your dad, because I think we see time and time again, most of the time kids aren't their fathers. Now, I think LeBron James might be the only one that has some kids coming up that might, because his kids are pretty good at basketball, but it's hard. It's so hard.
Yeah.
I mean, who, you know, only time will tell. But someone I'm really excited about for Georgetown is this guy, Chris Sodom. Now, he's a freshman, but get this, Herman. He is 7'3". 7'3". And he actually moves pretty well for his size. So, Pat, I think people aren't talking about that enough. The fact that Pat got him, I think if he could be a big man that can continue to move well, because I'll tell you, for his size, he moves pretty well.
Okay.
He's not a liability catching the ball under the basket. I think if they can develop him right, this guy is going to be very, very good. Because I think sometimes you see tall people and sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad, right? But I think at Georgetown and with somebody like Pat who's played the center position, he can develop.
Well, the old saying is this, if you have a big man that can run and catch the ball, then
mm-hmm.
you have a potential for a tremendous talent. And if he's capable of running and actually catching the ball in traffic,
mm-hmm.
then they can do some things with him. Because, you know, you can't teach size. So
Right, you can't. You can't.
You know, and you can hope that you can sign a player with that type height, but once you get them on at your school and on the floor of your arena, what you're trying to teach them then is, let me find out what he can do relatively
mm-hmm.
well right now.
Right.
And we're going to work on that to try to perfect it. And so, if he can catch and run and then you can perfect one part of his game initially, then you're on the upside already. So if Pat saw something in him, I'm convinced that there's something in him.
He's going to be fun to watch here in the area, in the DMV, as we call it, Herman. Another person that I think needs to be talked about is Antoine Walker. He's a reserve, but he's a freshman. But get this, he's a Washington, D.C. product. Uh-oh, so that's great, right? Ewan has this guy who is a local, and he picked the Hoyas over Virginia Tech, you know, which was pretty big, especially because we have a new coach. And you know, will he get a lot of time? No, but I think he'll learn a lot. But someone who people think will get a lot of time is Trey Dickerson, who's a senior. As I mentioned before, he's a graduate transfer from South Dakota. Now, he started his career actually at Iowa, but at Iowa, he struggled to get on the floor. Now, he might be the backup point guard going into the season. Some actually believe he can start if Mosley struggles. So Dickerson is another person to watch out for the Hoyas, but I think the Hoyas need to be given some respect because I don't know if you saw, but the Big East coaches expected them to finish ninth, Herman, in the conference.
No.
Ninth, just ahead of DePaul.
I don't expect them to finish that low.
I thought that was hurtful.
I think that Well, it may be doing Pat a favor. Like I said, you know, the polls don't really mean much. You know, the coaches pretty much know, they have a pretty good handle as to what other teams have. But, you know, some of it I think is it's that psychology thing. Let's play with their heads,
right.
You know, and try to turn it into a self-fulfilling prophecy. So, you know, if they're able to do that, then fine. But I think Pat Ewing, with the names that you've mentioned, and honestly, with the minimum amount of knowledge that I have about each of their individual players, I think that fifth or sixth may be better.
Okay, right. Let's just move them up somewhat. Well, that does it for my doing it in the DMV segment. And now, Herman, we're going to go to my Across the Nation segment. We're going to talk about all college basketball teams because USA Today released their preseason college basketball poll for the 2017-2018 season. And guess what, Herman? None other than Duke was ranked number one. Now, tell me, do you think the Blue Devils, are they the real deal? Does Coach K have what it takes? A lot of people are talking about 6'11" sophomore Marquez Bolden and senior captain, of course, the Tripper. Oh, maybe I shouldn't have said that. Grayson Allen. Do the Blue Devils have what it takes to – are they going to win it all, Herman? Let me just ask you flat out.
Well, I know a lot of Turk fans no, Maryland's going to win it all. But a lot of Terp fans will probably be up in arms about me saying this. But anytime you have a Mike Krzyzewski coach team, you have a possibility that you're going to win the national championship. Okay, because he signs tremendous talent. He signs tremendous talent, and tremendous talent wants to attend Duke. You know, he has a system in place that, I guess, gets the best out of the players that he has on his roster. Now, as far as I'm concerned, will they win it? I don't think so.
You don't think so. They finished 28-9 last season, but people think they have. And get this, Michigan State comes in at number two. Now, previously, last year, they were unranked. They finished 20-15 last season. But people really think they're going to be national contenders. Now, of course, they have 6'11" Jaren Jackson, who pretty much has led the team. And, of course, who can forget the superstar Miles Bridges? Now, Michigan State, I don't think they're going to win it all. But, I mean, you tell me, Herman, do you think they have a pretty solid team at least to, you know, go pretty far possibly in March Madness?
Yes, I watched them because they're out here in the Midwest. And, you know, I've seen them up close and in person. That team – the same thing I said about Mike Krzyzewski, you can say the same thing about Tom Izzo. And that 20-15 record last year was truly an aberration. You know, that was a blip on the screen. Forget about it.
Right.
Don't even think that. And you know, you have to take into consideration, Michigan State does what a number of other teams don't do. They play a lot of top-ranked teams at the beginning of their year. So, Izzo may go into January with a 2-4 record or a 2-5 record or something along those lines. But because the Big Ten season is pushed up this year, and the Big Ten season is going to start, I think, at the beginning of December this year. I don't think they're going to have the opportunity to play, you know, your UCLA's, your Kentucky's, and all those type teams. But I think they're going to make a run at the tournament, but you can expect Izzo and Izzo's team to be right there in the mix when it's all said and done. Also, that's
okay.
I'm pretty much sense. Yeah,
you can't count against Izzo, like you say.
No.
I thought this was pretty good. Kansas came in at number three, Kentucky at number four. So Kansas finished last season 31-5. Kentucky finished last season 32-6. Now, of course, at Kansas with Bill Self's Jayhawks, they are favored to win their 14th consecutive Big 12 regular season title. Now, some people, though, are saying they lack depth in the front court, but they say they're loaded in the back court. They have Graham, Newman, Vic. They have a lot of guards, basically. And then on the other side, John Calipari in Kentucky, they said he had to replace a lot of talent because we know what happens at Kentucky, right? The ones and done. They say he has a lot of big talent, versatile forwards. And then they have a newcomer in 6'5", Diallo, and 6'9", Knox. Now, do you think Kansas and Kentucky, where are they faring? Because, of course, Most people always have them in their brackets come tournament time.
Well, now, Kelsey, I'm an honest man. I'm a very forthright man.
Okay.
I am not a big Bill Self, nor am I a big John Calipari fan. They signed tremendous talent. They signed tremendous talent. And honestly, I think that if Self hadn't been playing, if I get this right, if Self hadn't been playing Calipari for the national championship when they won it at Kansas, I don't think he would have won the national championship. And Calipari, I just have to say what I say on my Facebook pages anyway. I can't sit back here and try to hold it back now. Calipari, I've never been a John Calipari fan. Calipari fan, because I think that everyone looks at the players that he signs, and there may be evidence out there to the contrary as far as what he does for these players afterwards, after this one and done thing, you know.
Right.
But any player that Calipari has signed, you can go play at Catawba, and they will be a number one draft pick. So what have you done to improve them in the lot as being men? And what have you perfected in their games while they're at Kentucky? That's what I'm looking at. So,
So, can you share a little bit about what did your coach do specifically? Like, you know, what did you think he did outside of the basketball game to help prepare you, as you said, as a man for stuff that happens off of the basketball court that maybe Calipari could learn from?
Well, not that he can learn from that, but the things that I think helped me essentially, I was involved with a number of things, with a certain thing that occurred while I was at school, but my coach had nothing to do with that. But that there are things that you can do as far as, you know, we call it putting fat on a person's head.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not involved in the personal conversations that Calipari has with his players, but what I am convinced of is that he is capable. He knows how to identify top-notch talent. He's luring them with the grandeur of Kentucky basketball. I'm saying it's old school basketball. It's one of the premier universities in the country as far as basketball is concerned. And you're getting them there, and because you are an NBA coach, you know how to talk the talk to make these kids believe that they should actually do. We call it one and done. But there are a number of his players. Yeah, you have the outstanding talents like a Karl Anthony Towns or John Wall, players such as those players. Those players were going pro anyway. Kelsey. Okay.
Right.
What are you doing with that 15th man? You know, that 14th man. That's what I want to see. You know, and there's never been enough conversation regarding that. You know, I think the parents even are enamored with the idea that, hey, John Calipari came and sat down in my living room.
He's a big name.
Yeah, he coached in the NBA. His players go to the NBA. But, ma'am, you have to understand, sir, you have to understand that the talent that your son possesses would have allowed him or afforded him the same opportunity at another school. I'm not trying to turn this into a John Calipari bashing section segment, but maybe I am. But what player have you seen identified there that was a mid-range player that has gone on to play in NBA?
See, that's a great point. That is a great point you make, and I'm sure you have a lot of Kentucky fans. Maybe they're mad, but everybody else, we're scratching our heads. Because like you said, you're making really, really good points. And, I mean, you talked about that. And that kind of leads me to, I'm going to go to number six. I'm going to skip. So number five was Arizona, but I'm going to go to number six because it's Villanova. Right, and a lot of people would say the same thing, that the Villanova Wildcats get a lot of great players. So this year they'll be led by veterans, junior guard Jalen Brunson, who made a lot of noise, junior guard and forward Malik Bridges, and then Omari Spellman, 6'9", redshirt freshman who can score in and out. So what do you think about Coach Jay Wright? I mean, he's had three consecutive 30-win seasons, and some are saying this will be the fourth season that he does that. I mean, Villanova, 32-4 last year.
I think Jay does a great job also, but I think Jay has the right temperament. The program that he's with right now, I think they are the perfect fit. I think that guy is the perfect fit for the Villanova program. I think the players and you know, there have been times when he's had teams that they thought should have progressed even further, and they've fallen short. But I look at these basketball games on, you know, in the confines of my home, and I look at these coaches, and I look at how they interact with the players as they're coming off the floor, and while they're on the bench, or after they've done something wrong, and he may have taken them out the game. And how he goes down and he actually squats down in front of them and he says something to them. I don't know if it's harsh. I don't know, you know, what the tenor of the conversation is, but they get the job done for him.
You know, that's what it speaks to.
Right. It seems as if players enjoy playing for Jay Wright at Villanova.
And that's what it's all about, right? You have to have that relationship with your coach. And I mean, and so that leads me to number seven. I'm gonna go to number seven, Florida, because I don't know if you saw, but the Florida football coaches has been getting death threats, which is ridiculous. Like, I'm a college sports fan, but people go way too far. Death threats, really? So Florida basketball is expected to finish number seven. Hopefully the basketball coach doesn't have to put up with that. If his team doesn't do as well. But Florida finished last year 27-9. Of course, they're led by Coach Mike White, who led the Gators to the Elite Eight last season. So I think that's pretty good. And then he'll need point guard Chris, I'm not even saying his last name, Chizola. Probably saying that wrong. And Gavon Allen. But I think more impressively, North Carolina was ranked number 9, Herman. They were previously ranked number 1 last season. But, of course, people pushed them down because they lost three key starters from their 2017 NCAA title team. So he's going to have to count a lot on senior point guard Joel Berry. I mean, is Warren Williams, is he losing his mojo this season, Herman? Is North Carolina possibly going to win the championship, or are they just not going to be able to recover from losing their three key starters last season?
I don't think they'll be in contention for the national championship, but I think that they'll play great basketball. You know, Roy is one of those guys. I think he does a great job also. You know, he's done a great job wherever he's been, at Kansas, at North Carolina. But I just think they may lack a little talent this year. You know, the Berry kid, if I remember correctly, he's a great shooter. They always do a great job on the boards. You know, North Carolina is one of those teams that always rebounds well. If you ask Roy, he wouldn't say that, but
I know, that would be his critique.
Right. No coaches think their teams rebound well, but
you can never have enough rebounds, right?
absolutely. So I think they're slotted about right, maybe number 9. You know, but I think a lot of that being slotted even that high is based on the fact that it's North Carolina.
I agree, right, because let's just be honest, right, if I had been, I don't even know, but a different school, right, if I wasn't, North Carolina is always going to get some respect in the basketball world, especially as long as Roy Williams is at its helm, because they've been good for so long. So I agree with that. That's why, because they're actually ranked right before West Virginia, who finished last season 28-9. So tell me, I mean, what do you think, Coach Bob Huggins? I feel like the Mountaineers don't get the credit or recognition, but West Virginia has begun to make some noise, and they're returning three starters back from last year's Sweet 16 team, okay? Senior point guard Javon Carter will be – some people are saying he will be a Big 12 Player of the Year candidate. So what do you think about West Virginia?
Possibly.
Okay,
Virginia. Huggins is my kind of coach, you know.
Okay.
Huggins has that demeanor that, you know, hey, let's get out here and get it done. Even if we think that we're if everyone thinks that we're short as far as the talent is concerned, or we're talent deprived, we're going to get out here and we're going to do one thing. We're just going to play harder than everybody else.
Right.
You know.
Right.
You can't sell that short. The fact that if I come out and if I just play harder than you, you know, I may not win every game, but you're going to know that you are in a game. And
right.
That Huggins is my, as far as that's concerned, Huggins is my kind of coach because he believes in pushing up man-to-man defense all over the court, and he doesn't like it when guys get uncontested layups and things of that nature, you know.
He wants you to contest everything.
Absolutely. There's a reason they call them space eaters. They call big men space eaters because they want them to attach their bodies to someone when they penetrate the lane. Or when, you know, Ben Coleman and I, we used to say, yeah, bump him. You know, they don't allow that much of that in the game because they want the players to be able to run about freely and all that. But if you come into what we consider our territory, which is that paint, then you're supposed to at least feel a little contact. And that's what Huggins, I think, preaches.
Okay. Well, you know, going from Huggins, I'm going to get into some hot water because I want to talk about number 16, Louisville, who finished last year 25-9. Now, of course, I want to go to Louisville because why? They're in turmoil right now with the scandal going on with the basketball program and all that happened with Coach Rick Pitino. Now, interim coach David Padgett still has a lot of talented guys. People are saying he has Adele, Snyder, and B.J. King on the roster. But, I mean, with all that's going on at Louisville, first of all, let me get your thoughts on that. Tell me, what were your thoughts when you first heard about the FBI investigating Louisville and all that happened with Coach Rick Pitino being placed on leave and then fired? What were your thoughts when all that broke?
Well, when it first broke, I heard the four names of the assistant coaches, and then I heard Pitino's name as far as Louisville is concerned. And I'm going to be honest with you, because Pitino is from my era, I was pretty much – and I've spoken with several guys that I went to school with, either by Facebook or by phone. And personally, I was the only one. I was devastated because – you know, you build up programs, and then I listened to Pitino, and I've spoken with Pitino personally on one or two occasions, and you know, briefly, and the things that he said, it convinced me that hey, this guy knows basketball, but he's concerned with those kids, and to hear what happened or what allegedly happened, even if they're not implicating him personally with that, it devastated me because you're looking at a guy that has built up a program after it was on the downturn for a period of time after Denny Crum left, and then he built it back up. That was a great thing, and to have it now, have the whole program have to endure what it's enduring now. And you know, it was self-inflicted. That's a self-inflicted wound. If everything they're saying is true, it's self-inflicted. And, you know, we've got to get that aspect of recruiting out of the game. Either they are going to decide that they're going to give these kids money, and that which is long overdue, or
3 or 4 paying players.
Yes, I am. I'm 100%. Or they're going to just make that aspect of the college experience, I'm talking about football and basketball, like the minor leagues for the professional leagues.
These are good points.
Where the professionals would actually, they would have to infuse money into the system. Because that's all they are. They're breeding grounds. They're minor leagues. Baseball does it. They have minor league franchises. So, why can't
– and baseball seems to be the most successful with it because, well, I mean, what do you think about the G League for the NBA?
I think that that is still open for, I guess, whether or not it's going to be successful or not. I know it resembles – it's just like the CBA used to be, but, I'm not – up on all the ins and outs and nuances of it, but I think that even if you are with a team and they're, you're considered like a premium player for the G League team, if
right.
the team, just say like the Windy City Bulls out here, if the Bulls
uh-huh.
don't want you, and if you're considered a premium player, then the other NBA franchises are given the opportunity to actually sign you.
Right.
And the way it used to be is that the CBA franchise, if you play for a CBA franchise that was affiliated with an NBA team, that NBA team was the only team that could sign you. So,
right. Like you said, I think
people
are still trying to figure it out because minor league baseball seems to be the only thing right now that has really bred, you know, great players. Like you said, basketball, I think they're trying to figure out a short thing. And, of course, football doesn't have it yet, but you talked about it. Well, football, yeah. at least the National Football League doesn't recognize in minor league, even though there are minor league football leagues around, actually one based here in D.C. But I think you make a great point. Like, if you're not paying the players, I mean, I think just recruiting as a whole, Herman, personally, it's so much going on. And I think,
yes.
people know stuff is going on, but Louisville got caught. Now, Patino,
yes.
like you said, who knows? He said he didn't know. He said he took the lie detector test right and that it came back negative. But at the same time, I mean, don't you think as a head coach you need to know everything going on? Because isn't that the job of a head coach?
Now, that's a misperception. There's no way. You're talking about young men. And I would just liken it to a parent. You would like to think as a parent that you know everything that's going on with your 16, 17, 18, 19-year-old child that's living within your home.
Okay.
And you don't.
That's a good point,
No parent knows everything that's going on with their child. You would like to
right.
think that you know. Okay, or you would like to
right.
put systems in place so that you can remain apprised as to what's occurring with your child. But you have 15 athletes living off campus nowadays or living away from the coach at night and the assistant coaches. And there are things
right.
that occur that you're not knowledgeable of. Okay, so,
right.
you know, you like I said, you would like them to know, but. Of course, they don't know everything that's going on. And I think it's asking too much. It's asking too much of a person to have them held fully. Yes, that I'm saying the buck stops with them, but to have
okay.
them to be held fully responsible for every little thing that goes on in one of those players' lives is asking entirely
mm-hmm.
too much.
Okay, so tell me, do you think Louisville basketball, can they bounce back with the players, I said? I mean, or do you think this program, because of everything that happened, will they be in shambles? Because they were projected to finish number 16.
Yeah, I don't know Padgett personally. I think I know who you're talking about. Scott Padgett?
David,
no, I don't know him. But, you know,
and he's
Louisville
an interim
is the
coach
most...
for now.
Yeah, but Louisville is the most successful program as far as financially in the country. And
mm-hmm.
I think because they have that support, that's going to enable them to, I guess, get over this hurdle more quickly than a lesser school would be able to get over the hurdle. You know,
okay, good point.
Yeah, the fans are going to put some requirements on those guys that this program not remain in shambles for long.
Right.
So,
it's too big for that school. It's too basketball, too
yes.
big for that school to be
yes.
in shambles. And then that
yes.
brings me, I want to skip to number 19 because I think they did really well last year. They finished 37-2, Gonzaga, Herman. Wow, I think Gonzaga basketball proved last year they are back. Now, people are saying their historic run last year by the Bulldogs won't be the same this season, but they did bring back two major pieces, guard Josh Perkins and forward Jonathan Williams. Now, Keelan Tilly will be asked to play a bigger role in the middle, but what about Gonzaga? I mean, do you think the Bulldogs are going to come marching back as they did last season?
Real succinctly? No, and because they had several teams in the Final Four last year, I'm not a really big West Coast basketball fan as far as college is concerned. I just okay. think that they play a different brand of basketball. And then when you assign Big Ten referees to these tournament games, I think they struggle. I think they struggle because Big Ten basketball is a more fluid game. I'm sorry, the West Coast basketball is a more fluid game. And starting from like I guess Nebraska on East, there's more touching in basketball on this side of the country than it is, and I think they suffer from the assignments of the referees in the tournament. So if when I'm doing a pool or when I'm doing one of those, filling out one of the brackets, I don't think I've ever gotten a West Coast team, unless it's UCLA when they were thriving a couple of years ago. I don't think I've ever put them above a top 16 finish or a top 8 finish. You know, Gonzaga, as you said, I think they're where they get where they are because they have an outstanding coach. Is it the same coach to you? Yeah.
I think he should still be there. I'm like, you couldn't get rid of him after what he did.
Last season, what a championship game it was. Yeah, he gets it done. He gets it done out there. But I don't think they'll make as much noise as they did last year. Not even close.
Okay. Well, under them is Northwestern, who impressed everybody last year. Unless you were a Northwestern grad, you didn't expect Northwestern, I don't think, to do what they did. They finished 24-12. They were previously not ranked. Now, the backcourt of the guy who made a lot of noise last season, Bryant McIntosh, who averaged 14.8 points per game, and Scotty Lindsey, 14.1 points per game, they're bringing them back. And some think they could actually win the Big Ten this year. So, I mean, are you a believer in Northwestern? Are you a believer in the Wildcats?
Now, I must say, I live about an hour from Northwestern, and I went to a couple of their games last year.
Okay.
And who I'm a believer in, they have an outstanding talent. They have outstanding talent, don't get me wrong, those guys. But I watch those guys play, and I'm a believer in that Collins kid. That Collins kid knows how to coach the game of basketball.
Yes,
and,
he is. Yep.
And if I wasn't a Maryland alumni, fear the turf, I would definitely be all over Northwestern because I am a believer in what that guy does at Northwestern. I'm saying those guys, they run plays in the games like that's the way they practice them. I'm saying that their cuts are sharp. They come off the ball hard. They square up on their jump shots. They run the break the way that I was taught the break was supposed to be ran. And that Glenn, what's his name? All I know is his last name. I know he's Doug Collins' son. But he does an outstanding job with the players that he has at Northwestern. And Northwestern may need to be ranked higher.
Wow. I mean, who can forget last year, their first NCAA tournament appearance? They really woke up the nation and said, yep, Northwestern, we've got basketball, which I think was great to see. And rounding it out, I want to end with a school I think that doesn't get any credit for basketball. Number 25 is Alabama. They were 19-15 last season. Now, in the third year, they have Adrie Johnson at the helm. The Crimson Tide poised for their best season, people are saying, with this former NBA coach. They returned four starters. How incredible is that, Herman? Forward Braxton Key, of course, kind of led the way. And then they said there's an outstanding recruiting class led by guard Colin Sexton and John Petty. Wow, that will booster the backcourt. Alabama, no more. Crimson Tide is no longer just repping football. Alabama basketball is ranked number 25. Do you think they have what it takes to really become dominant in college basketball?
Just like with the Collins kid, Avery Johnson is getting it done in Alabama. He's returning four starters. And because he has the credentials, it's going to open up, you know, that it's going to be like a turnstile for him as far as signing talent. And then, you know, once these kids start seeing these schools on television and they're making all this noise. You know, success breeds success. And
right.
once he starts showing that he's capable of getting it done at Alabama, don't be surprised that they start, you know, you start seeing them appear in the best recruiting classes, you know, in the top 10 or top 15 recruiting classes throughout the United States as far as basketball is concerned. And then, you know, the kid, they like the athletic experience at Alabama. You go to Alabama and you get to see Crimson Tide football. Come on,
yep.
let's be real. You know,
yep. Can you imagine going there for a visit, Herman, as a recruit, and you're going to a football game at Alabama? I mean, is there anything like it? I don't think so.
Absolutely. There can't be anything like it. I'm saying they continue to be the number one ranked team in the country, and that's on a year-in, year-out basis. And you know, that carries over into basketball and to the other sport. You know,
look at Alabama. Look at, I like it. Getting back on basketball, man.
Yep. So.
Former NBA coach. We talked about that.
I think he's going to make a lot of noise down there, and don't be surprised. I don't know where they have them picked to finish in the SEC, I think Kentucky is not going to want to play them twice this year.
Watch out, Kentucky fans. Herman's coming for y'all.
Yeah.
No, I think it was good. That was such a fun college basketball segment show. And now, as I end every show, I like to go to my Woman Crush Everyday segment, where I'm staying in the basketball realm, but moving up to the WNBA. I want to recognize Rebecca Brunson and Sylvia Fowles. I want to recognize Rebecca Brunson because I'm going to go back to the WNBA championship game that happened. Rebecca Brunson's 5 titles are the most in WNBA history. She's the first player to earn 5 WNBA titles. Wow. I mean, can you say anything else about that? And Sylvia Fowles finished the WNBA finals game with 17 points and 20 boards. I mean, she pretty much does it all. She went through 5 WNBA games in the finals, 5 WNBA finals, double-doubles, and then your MVP, Sylvia Fowles, was the first to win regular season and WNBA Finals MVP honor since Lauren Jackson in 2010. So I want to give props to these ladies who were doing it on the court. And as I do every show, Herman, thank you so much for being here. It was a true joy to have you.
Thank you, Kelsey. And again, as I stated previously, fear the turtle. Fear the turtle.
Fear the turtle. And as I close out every show, all right, that's a wrap for this edition of Listening with K&N Sports Talk Podcast. I hope you had fun, learned something, and, of course, jumped in on the K&N bandwagon. Be sure to listen in each and every Thursday morning when a new show drops online at foxsports1340am.com. If that's not enough, the show is available for downloads on iTunes and Google Play. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Your feedback and support matter. Guess what, guys? Coming up, I have ESPN's Freddie Coleman and the top sports agent in the U.S. That's right, the one and only Mr. Lee Steinberg. So until next week, enjoy the sports world, smile, and don't take your fantasy sports too seriously because there's always another play.
Follow Kelsey on Twitter at TheRealKNelson. You've been listening to Listen In with KNN on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM Fox Sports Radio.